Hey everyone, it's Graham Bundy from Georgetown University, and this is the D Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analyst, my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Last weekend of the regular season is upon us. Lots of great, important games on the schedule. As always, we'll get you pumped for those games, and we'll talk to Georgetown's All-American Graham Bundy Jr. ahead of the Hoyas regular season finale against Villanova. Lots to get to, so Dixie, let's get it. Dix, it's the end of the regular season, and for almost every team, every league, is the Big Ten the only conference tournament that starts officially this weekend?
I think so. The reason that that happens is because all six of the teams make it, and the top two seeds get treated as such. They go right to the semifinals. They get a week off, and then the four quarterfinalists, the three through six teams, play this weekend. So I do believe, and that crossed me up when I listened back to the show last week when we were doing game previews. I'm like, next week when the tournament begins, next, and I think I was saying it for like, and I'm like, I got to get it out of my, I got Big Ten brain, and most tournaments, well, all the other tournaments don't start until this time next week. So
yeah,
shame on me.
I've always said this, that the conference tournament week's like my favorite of the
it's great
the lacrosse season, especially I think it's like that Thursday when everything starts, where there's just so many games that are very meaningful for a lot of teams that can be where their season ends or they move on and they like get to, you know, closer to their ultimate goal of their season, and it's a really fun time. But this week, some really important games that are fun, and we've been watching some of them line up. Like one of the games we're going to talk about is Towson and Delaware. And those two teams have gone undefeated in their conference. And, you know, just the fact that they meet on the last weekend of the season as rivals is really special and will be really fun to watch. But let's go back and look at last week before we move ahead, because last weekend was just amazing. Incredible weather on the East Coast, incredible crowds everywhere. Homewood Field is a great example of that, where there were more than 10,000 people packed. Syracuse, Virginia game, anywhere. There were just great crowds everywhere. And the Jays keep the Crab Trophy in front of a massive crowd in a big game. So it was an awesome weekend.
It really was. Friday night, I was at Rutgers, Penn State Rutgers. The Nittany Lions sewed up the number three seed in the Big Ten tournament and won the Friendship Cup over the Scarlet Knights. So it was an up and back for me. And then I got a few hours of sleep. Flew out first thing Saturday morning to Columbus to do Michigan-Ohio State Saturday night. So what do? I stayed in my room and watched lacrosse. I went to get something to eat, hit Buckeye Donuts, and got a bagel and a couple of treats. So then I went back to my room and fired up the iPad and started watching the various games that were being streamed. Then 2 o'clock hit, and it was Syracuse, Virginia, and then 4 o'clock was obviously Maryland Hopkins, and then I had to, you know, right around 4:45 is when I left for Ohio State Cross Stadium. But just you hit it. I mean, this is in the blink of an eye, we're here, and the weather, the crowds, the play, the passion, the energy, the excitement—it was all there. And what a terrific weekend of college lacrosse.
Yeah, it was so fun. And I missed part. I went to a game. So I went up to Princeton and watched a game against Penn. And I set my DVR to tape the two ESPNU games. So the Syracuse, Virginia game. And then the Hopkins, Maryland game is coming on right after. And you watched the Syracuse, Virginia game. I watched it because I started my 4 o'clock taping of when that should have been the beginning of the Hopkins game. And then I was treated to the entire fourth quarter of Virginia UVA. I don't understand how that game ran so long, but by the time they cut away from the 2 o'clock game to the Hopkins Maryland game, it was 13 minutes, 15 seconds left in the second quarter. So on my taping of the game, I missed the entire first quarter of the Blue Jays, including that Garrett Degnan hit, our guest from last week. And I know I can go back and watch it on ESPN Plus and I have to find it, but it's just more complicated. But I did watch that end of the Syracuse Virginia game and what a game that was. And then, of course, I mean, I mentioned the Blue Jays' big win. So awesome. Awesome. And then the game I went to, Mikey G scores a coast-to-coast goal in a meaningful part of the game. He wins his last home game at Princeton and scores sort of the clinching goal. Man, what a night. What a game that
And it
was.
was his mother's birthday that day, right?
Yeah, well, a couple days before, but yeah, it was
Okay.
amazing.
So Syracuse, Virginia, you asked me, or you made a comment,
Yeah,
wow,
what?
why would that game take so long? Ton of goals. So that means the clock is stopping, you know, and when you have 35 goals, and I know that we talked last week about whenever Syracuse and Virginia get together, especially in the dome, everybody kind of goes back to that 1997 game. This game last weekend had 1997 vibes in terms of just getting up and down the field and the offensive pressure that each team put on the other. Billy Dwan, first team All-American,
Oh,
potentially.
yeah,
Am I crazy?
potentially. He should be a candidate for first second team All-American. He's having that good of
He's
a season.
ridiculous. I mean, outside of Will Mark, and maybe even included Will Mark, Syracuse best player.
He may be their best player. What's fascinating about him is his impact all over the field. Sure, he's scored some goals, but he's become a shutdown defender against some of the best guys in the country. He facilitates a lot of transition opportunities for them and he scores goals. How many goals does he have?
Seven. He has seven goals.
Seven goals. That's
And
old time.
impactful goals. A late impactful goal against Cornell. Or I can't remember when that goal was scored, but it was like a between the legs kind of situation.
That's old time Syracuse. That's
Yeah.
a vintage Syracuse defender type of stuff.
So I've watched Billy Dwan play for a while. He played with both of my kids at Loyola High School. And people ask me, like, oh my God, like Billy Dwan, how is he so good at scoring goals? He plays in a holiday tournament run by Deemer Class, First Class Lacrosse, a three by tournament. So it's short-sided and you play with offensive sticks. He plays with my son Owen every year. And their team has won this tournament the last 2 years running. Actually, they might not have been teammates this year. I think Billy might have played for a different team, but Owen's team still won the championship. But Billy is one of the best players out there with a short offensive stick. So honestly, if he wasn't an All-American caliber defenseman, he potentially could be an offensive, like just as good at offense as he is with the long pole for Syracuse, because he's just that talented.
In a really fun season for the Orange, he's definitely one of the brightest spots
Right.
for that team. That is, I mean, really positioned themselves well for a top seed in the NCAA tournament.
Right. You mentioned the Hopkins game. That Garrett Degnan hit. I mean, that is the most violent hit I have seen in a really, really long time. And all I could think about watching that hit on Colin Burles, who's an outstanding player for Maryland and an incredibly tough, tough defender, a couple things came to mind. One, that was, even though Hopkins played Maryland at Homewood Field last year in the Big Ten semifinals, that was a weekday game. Crowd wasn't great, and it wasn't like a regular season. It wasn't for the crowd, right? The last time they played Maryland on Homewood Field was that 22-7 debacle in 2022, where 75% of the stadium was red, and that game was 22-3 going into the fourth quarter, yada, yada, yada. That hit from Garrett Degnan was kind of like everything that team had been putting up with, and he just unleashed it on a really talented player who, wearing number 40, like his dad, Brian Burles, Bubba Burles, won the 92 Schmeisser, I think, is the best defender in the country. And Bubba was a very rugged player, very, very physical, very talented. He separated my shoulder when we played against each other in high school. He played at St.
Yes.
Mary's. I was at Loyola. Bubba's a couple of years older than me. But that hit was, and we talked to Garrett last week, and we could tell the focus and the drive that he had and the rest of the team had. That, you know, and that was, I talked to Don, I was texting with Don Zimmerman after the game. Zim was part of the broadcast crew, and he agreed with me. He goes, that's probably the most violent hit I've seen in a long time. And it was appropriate. He got the 3-minute non-releasable. They took him right up to the line without ejecting Garrett. And then talking with some folks who were in town and saw Garrett after the game later that night, he had an imprint of the helmet on his shoulder from where when he hit Burles. Like, that's how impactful and how violent that hit was. So, and I think that hit, even though Hopkins went man down for 3 minutes, Maryland scored a couple of goals. They were losing 3-0 at the time. Maryland scored goals to get back in the game. I felt like that hit really set the tone for Hopkins, almost sending the message, there's no way we're losing this game today. There is no way we're losing this game today. And the defense, they were the heroes. They came up huge, holding Maryland to 5 goals. And that's a big win for the Jays, their first outright regular season Big Ten title ever. The night before, you had Loyola Navy, where the Hounds won their 5th in a row. And then the next day, Lehigh, that's another game I was watching. That's the game I was watching, I think, either right before the Virginia-Syracuse or I was watching it concurrently. I couldn't remember the timing, but Lehigh scores the overtime come from behind. They were down 5-6 goals to BU at home, come back and beat the Boston Terriers. And now the Patriot League is that much more thick with drama as you head into their final weekend of regular season play. So a lot going on.
The Big Ten, as the first team to finish the regular season, put out their all conference team. And I have some questions, right? Now you can answer them. I know you're not officially affiliated with the league in any way, but you watch a lot of Big Ten lacrosse.
I don't vote on this at all. Yeah. I have no say whatsoever in the Big Ten or all any, you know, nothing.
Have you seen the list of guys that made it?
I did. It came out today's Thursday. It came out Wednesday.
Do you have any insight into how they do it? There's 2 goalies on the first team. Mm-hmm. There's only 1 midfielder. And then on the second team, there's 3 short stick defensive midfielders. So they pick 10 guys, but it's not in any kind of like 3 attackmen, 3 midfielders, mm-hmm. like that you traditionally see. But some of the guys that we've talked to, Garrett Degnan, Ajax Zapatello, TJ Malone, all on the first team. Zapatello was the defensive player of the year. TJ Malone was the offensive player of the year. Cardin Stoller, I know you're high on him as the Rutgers goalie. He was the freshman of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, 2 goalies on the first team, but Jack Frassion was the specialist of the year. But Chase Erland also makes first team. Just a strange way to do it. Do they just say, write down your 10 favorite players? Is it something like that? And those are the guys who make first team?
Again, I don't know the process. I'm not involved in the process, and I haven't asked anybody about the process. When you look at that, to me, that just says, okay, here are the first team. Here are the best players to make. And here, the second team, here are the best players. If you look at the goalie position, I don't think that the Big Ten has ever been deeper or more talented top to bottom in the goalie position. When you look at Frassion, Chase Erland, and then you have Hunter Taylor coming back for Michigan, who made a gigantic play at the end of regulation, came out of his crease, picked up a ground ball. If that thing went south, Ohio State shooting at an empty net and mm-hmm. tying, and they're going to overtime, and Michigan coughed up a 4-goal lead late, would have coughed up a 4-goal lead late. Then you got Logan McNaney, who people say he's down, right? He's only won a national championship, been a first-team All-American, and been All-Conference before. And then you look at the young guys, the diaper dandies, Caleb Faya, Big Tasty, and Cardin Stoller.
Yeah.
And they're both 2 goalies that they could start for a lot of teams in Division One. So you take 2 goalies on the first team. This is a defensive conference. When you look at the candidates for freshman of the year, I think the strongest candidates were Cardin Stoller, Big Tasty, Caleb Fayok, and Quentin Kilrain. The freshman defender for Hopkins, who was freshman of the week from his game against Maryland this past week. You give it to Stoller because he was absolutely phenomenal between the pipes, playing as a first-year redshirt freshman in front of a brand new defense. All three starters on close were brand new for Rutgers. And you also have new shorties as well. So the entire defense for Rutgers was brand new. Stoller stood on his head. Tasty comes in behind arguably the best defense, statistically in the Big Ten. And Marcus Hudgens made first team all Big Ten. And then Kilrain is playing with a fifth-year goalie, a guy who's been around for 20 years in Bowden Zulik, and Scott Smith, who's an all Big Ten performer. So right, and Brett Martin, and a mid so I think Stoller being the new kid on the block playing behind new guys, he gets that nod. Offensive player of the year, I had it between TJ Malone and Shane Knoblauch, and they gave it to Malone, which I have no argument with there. So I think, Dan, they picked the best players for
Yeah,
each,
that's
regardless
obviously
of
something.
position.
It's just
Yeah.
different than what you normally see. And I was just
Absolutely. Yeah, no
curious if you
doubt.
know anything
But
about
the
it.
AC, when the ACC announces theirs and other conference, you'll see the same thing.
Yeah.
You'll see the same thing.
What I don't like is when there's like 20 people on the first team, right? I don't like that.
Well, we saw that. We've seen that through the years with the USILA All-Americans. We'll have seven or eight first team All-American attack. No, there needs to be three.
Yeah, I
Like,
agree with that.
it's okay to make second team.
One last point. Congrats to Coach Peter Millman. He was the
Coach
Big
of the
Ten
year.
Coach of the Year for Hopkins, going undefeated for the first time in the Big Ten. All right, Dix, moving on. You know, it feels like my daughter's spring season just started. Like, there's been like 3 or 4 weeks of games, but I got that email about summer hotel stuff, and it got me. I already have to start thinking about summer tournaments.
That's a lot of churn, man. A
It's
lot
a
of churn.
long way off, but. While we're on the subject, the All-America game is back. The New Balance All-America Lacrosse event returns to Baltimore this summer. The prestigious North-South Senior All-America Games for boys and girls will be played on Saturday, July 27th at Johns Hopkins' historic Homewood Field. The first wave of senior selections were recently announced, and the remainder of the All-America rosters will be unveiled over the next month. You can check InsideLacrosse.com for the announcements. High school athletes can also be part of the event by earning a place on the team roster in their region. Tryout sessions will be held in 12 different regions across the country for the 2026, 2027, and 2028 graduating classes this spring and summer. Players in the 2025 grad year are being invited and have the chance to prove that they deserve a place in the senior game the following year. Visit allamericalacrosse.com to find the schedule and register for your chance to rep your region. Don't miss the chance to rep your region. An alumni of this All-America game, Dix, is Graham Bundy Jr. He's our guest this week. Let's bring him in. Our guest today is Georgetown All-American Graham Bundy Jr. The Towharton nominee has posted 25 goals and 11 assists so far this season and captains the number 11 ranked Hoyas. Graham, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Graham, thanks so much for spending a couple minutes of your day with us. We know you got a busy schedule, ready to get on the road. 2023, Georgetown starts the season 0-3. 2024, with a different lineup, you start 0-2, including a tough loss at Loyola to open the season. What learnings did you take from 23 to apply to 24 to get the train back on the tracks?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that kind of we've thought a lot just in due to our past starts. But I think this is a very process-oriented team and program. I think that every year it's been a little different. I think my first few years here, it was a lot of the guys that we had building up through the program, trying to, whether it was due to recruiting or getting guys healthy, I think that was a major thing, creating depth there. And then we were fortunate enough to. Just from the guys who've came before me and what they were able to do, able to recruit some guys that stepped away from their program or just guys who started out at Georgetown were Maybe we brought in some transfers that kind of allowed us to bring in talent, but we know that with that became a little, there was some chemistry that would have to be earned throughout the fall and early spring. So I just think the new faces stepping in, whether it's from a different school or again from Georgetown, where holes were filled or holes were left and needed to be filled. We just, there have been a lot of years where guys needed to step in. And I think that unfortunately, it's taken us a few games during the regular season, but I think fortunately we're able to figure it out early on and hopefully make a run towards the end of the year.
One of the constant themes in the sport of lacrosse, especially men's Division I level, is growth of the game. When you hear about non-traditional areas, typically Texas, Florida, California, Oregon, Missouri's not on the tip of everyone's tongue, but that's where you're from. How would you best characterize Missouri lacrosse, and how proud are you to wave that state flag, being a member of Georgetown? The Georgetown Hoyas and being an All-American.
Yeah, I love my hometown. I think I was very lucky with some guys who were extremely devoted to the sport, growing the game, saw a vision in me and wanted to kind of see that through. So again, a tremendous amount of respect goes to guys like Andy Kay and everyone associated with the MICDS lacrosse program there. They were huge for me in my development. I think when you think about Missouri lacrosse, it's just gritty. I think you have guys that maybe don't. I was fortunate. My dad played lacrosse at Carolina and graduated in 91 there. So I had a little background or had a stick at a young age. But a lot of guys are jumping into the sport because they've seen the professional league or they've seen collegiate games and they're like, this is so cool. I want to be a part of this sport. So you get a lot of newcomers that aren't used to a lot of a competitive atmosphere of lacrosse. So a lot of guys kind of thrown out there and you get a lot of great athletes, big players, guys who can run up and down very well. The stick skills are a little bit behind some of the hotbed areas, but again, it's just a gritty. The ball is on the floor a little bit more due to those stick skills, but I think you have a lot more guys running up and down and displaying athleticism there.
It just brought back a shiver up my spine, that 91 Carolina team. That was my freshman year at Hopkins, and they bulldozed us as well as everyone else in the country. That team is typically not mentioned in the all-time greats, and they should be. Like, that team was a buzzsaw
Yeah,
that year.
I think my dad would agree.
Graham, you've had a really decorated college career. Second team All-American in 2022, or excuse me, 2021. First team 2022. Second team again last year and having a great season. But you also have played internationally and really had the great honor of being the team captain of the U21 team that won the gold in 2022 in Ireland. What did you take away from that experience playing internationally and representing Team USA? And what has that helped you bring to the Georgetown program?
Yeah, it was an incredible honor. I think I was fortunate to be selected to that team and make it through those tryout process. And yeah, it was through the COVID era, so it kept getting pushed back. Not too sure. Tryouts were being extended. Some guys were getting banged up, some guys coming in. So there was some aspect of, yeah, you needed to play well, you need to be a good dude, but it was also some luck. Some guys got hurt, had to move on there and bring in some new guys. So I think there's a good amount of luck in there too. I think that again, the process started at, I think, 105 guys. So, I mean, each of those 105 guys were extremely talented, and all of which I think you could have made a vote for into why they should be a part of that team. I think that Coach Myers did a great job of kind of selecting the right 23, maybe not the most talented or best 23. So, I think our guys bought into that, and it was just, we didn't have many weekends, didn't have many practices, but it was like while you're there, completely buying into that USA lacrosse. And it's kind of like that Miracle on Ice type when they're doing the suicides back and forth. And it's like, who are you playing for? That whole aspect. And I think that kind of resonated with us when you're kind of there at the US lacrosse headquarters or you're abroad wearing that USA shirt or jersey. I think that kind of is just like buy into what you're doing, the task at hand, and the group you have. So I think kind of just an automatic buy-in to the team and the group that you're with and learning on the fly is something that helped me a bunch. And I think that another thing is there's a lot of different ways that you can be effective on your or valued on your given team. I think that, like I said, we didn't have the guys who could always win one-on-one matchups or the most talented or the best shooters, whatever it may be. I think if you look at that team, you see a lot of guys across the board who were good at a lot of different things. I think Cole Kirst was a tremendous picker, off-ball mover, leader for us, just being in the right spots, making the right plays. And then you had guys like CJ Kirst who could blow by anyone. So those are two guys who happen to be brothers that play the game in two different ways that you kind of can put in different areas. But again, to keep it short, I think it's that you can be valued. You just gotta find kind of what you're good at and attack that, and you can be valued in many different ways on a team. And I think that our mix kind of gelled well together internationally.
Hey, while we're on the subject of brothers, we've interviewed CJ and asked him about playing with his brothers. We've interviewed Chris Kavanaugh. We've interviewed Sam English, all guys who have brothers playing college lacrosse. You also have a younger brother playing for the Hoyas. How special is that for the Bundy family to have you guys in the same place and playing together, and for you as a big brother playing with your younger brother?
I've been just really fortunate. Love all my brothers to death. I think that I have an older brother who is 7 years older than I am, so I never really got to play with him. He did a lot of showing us the ropes, but then I'm sandwiched 2 years between my older brother and younger brother, so I never had the opportunity until I got to college to kind of play without them. So I was used to middle school playing with either my older or younger brother, however that fell, and getting into high school there. So it's always been something that I've loved doing. I think that having someone that's on the same mindset, has the same program aspirations as you, is very cool. Going home, there's always someone that's same workout plan, all that good stuff. But yeah, I mean, Crawford's been tremendous for us. He has the injury bug a bit, which is unfortunate. And he hasn't been able to play or practice as much as I think he would have liked and as much as we would have liked. But he's been, again, tremendous for us and a leader off the field in terms of making sure that our guys have the waters they need, the electrolytes, the balls are in the right spots for drills. So it just makes me a proud older brother knowing that he's stepping up in ways, even though it's a little different than he would have imagined it.
You guys are the only team so far in 2024 to take down Notre Dame. And the biggest news out of that was not that you guys won, but Coach Warren at the end of the game, dancing, jumping around, then he got knocked over. That just kind of exemplifies his personality. Playing for him, how would you best describe Kevin Warren?
A ball of energy. I think he's gonna give it to you how it is. I think that I appreciate it because I think that there's whatever comes to his mind is what he's gonna say, or whatever comes to his mind is what he's gonna do. There's not much sit back, relax, like take it all in and then like say something that takes a little while. He's like on the fly, gives it to you how it is, raw emotion, which I think our team kind of thrives off of, and really enjoys getting that kind of raw emotion, as opposed to someone who's a Bill Belichick-esque with a hoodie on, sitting there after a touchdown, no reaction. It's pretty cool to see your head coach just as amped as the rest of the guys.
Along those lines, the shoe collection, Coach Warren, and it was Coach Rowlett, right, would do the shoe game.
Correct.
Coach Rowlett has moved on now, an assistant at Boston University. Who does Coach Warren, compete with these days for shoe game?
It's a good question.
Or
I
is he in a
think
league of his own now, down at the Hilltop?
he I mean, I think he's been in a league of his own. Coach Rowlett did a great job of kind of competing him and pushing him in that realm. I think some of our guys have upped their game a bit, but they're still working on the college budget, so it's a little harder to keep up with his 70 to 80 pairs or whatever it may be. But I think he's gone on to Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it to seek out some more competition and find an excuse to order more pairs.
Off the field, you graduated last year from the McDonough School of Business. You're in grad school, getting your master's in management. What's next for Graham Bundy after Georgetown? PLL, workforce, what do you want to do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that if the PLL, if I get an opportunity there, I think I'd love to take it. As a kid, no matter the sport, just being an athlete, I think your dream is always playing professionally, however that looks. So that's been a dream of mine and something that am definitely really wanting to do. So if that opportunity presents itself, I see myself taking that opportunity. And then I've again being at a school like Georgetown and the McDonough School of Business, I think I've learned a tremendous amount and found a passion in finance and business. So I'll be working in New York starting kind of mid-August there. So buys me a little time to dial in everything on the field if that does present itself. And guys have through the PLL have done a tremendous job kind of balancing both of being a great businessman and also making sure that they are at the top of their games and ready for their PLL.
The Big East Conference in and of itself is interesting. You know, Georgetown, Denver have been the names in that conference, but you know, Providence is much improved. Villanova is always kind of in the weeds, and they can spring an upset or two. It seems like everyone pays attention to Georgetown, Denver in particular, beginning of the year, because you guys play such an aggressive out of conference schedule. And you guys kind of fly beneath the radar once conference play hits, in large part. And Dan knows how I feel about, you know, the lack of a media deal that Big East has. And then, but you're here, you know, you're competing for a Big East Conference championship, a bid to the NCAA tournament, and then a potential championship weekend caliber team in the Georgetown Hoyas. What's it like to play in the Big East? And what's it like to play at Georgetown, where you're not on television, you know, every week or every other week?
Yeah, I think that there are definitely positives and negatives, I think, to the situation. I think that I'll start with like the positives. I think that again, like you mentioned, the Big East is kind of in a conference that gets overlooked. So I think kind of being able to keep your head down, no little social media influence, little listen to the outside speak. Allows our team to kind of just dial in, take care of business. We start the season on kind of a tough schedule there, but then you know the way to the playoffs is winning the Big East. And at the end of the day, if you win the Big East, you're in the playoffs. It doesn't matter what happens in those earlier games, and we know that our coaches know that. And so dialing in there with again little outside talk or listening allows kind of us to keep our head down, keep focused, and keep trekking along. I do think it's unfortunate because I think that the conference is growing tremendously. Just the steps that teams like Providence, St. John's, Marquette have taken. I think Denver, Georgetown, and Villanova have kind of been the top three or the top half of that. But I think those bottom three are mixing themselves very well into contention there, which has been really cool. And you see plays throughout the Big East yet where the streaming service may not be what we wanted. There's little publicity there, and it's unfortunate times when guys make plays that the ACC gets posted for, or whatever it may be. And just outlook for those guys, I think, would be beneficial for the Big East. And there's tremendous play going on in there that I think that you see across the board in any conference. Like every conference is getting insanely competitive throughout the last few years. So I think that it's important to acknowledge that. A lot of these conference and these teams have some really good players that deserves as many looks as those other conferences that maybe get more ESPN viewage or whatever it may be.
Graham, you, TJ Haley, Aiden Carroll get a lot of attention on the Hoyas team, and rightfully so. You have a freshman goalie. Who are some of the other players on the defensive side of the ball besides Anderson Moore, who are the fan lacrosse fans across the country need to know about?
I mean, that's a great question. I could go on and on about a lot of our guys, whether they play or not. We have a tremendous our group that does kind of our scout has been tremendous for us offensively, as well as providing some backup support for our defense if anyone goes down. So quick shout out to those guys because they make our offense better, and they're always willing to step in when something happens to one of those guys. But I gotta start out with my guy Will Godin, who I've been with for 5 years now. I haven't seen anyone work harder than that kid or more deserving to come back, be honored as captain, and help lead us. He's been tremendous just in terms of keeping the energy high. Loves this program more than anyone, and so he's definitely a guy who's a ground ball machine. He's gritty. He gets knocked down, he's right back up, and definitely there to boost our guys up. But I think Ty Banks is another guy who'll be here for a while, and He's been great at shutting down other teams' ones. We normally put him on their one, so he's been great as a freshman guy stepping in there. Wesley Chairs is dealing with something different coming from Mercer to Georgetown, and I think that he's handled the adjustments perfectly and kind of been a veteran, mature player that we needed to see out of him. And a guy like Seamus Foley, Will Tominovich got hurt for us early in the year, and that was a tough blow, but I think Seamus Foley has done a tremendous job stepping in there as someone who didn't get as many looks as he wanted to in previous years. So you have got Hess gets a tremendous amount of respect, I think, from other teams, and that's a name that I'm sure people have seen around, but he's a workhorse athlete. And then Jack Leary kind of complements that short stick D mid line. So it's hard to pick out one. I mean, Will Godin is a staple of the guy that gets overlooked and is insanely important for us, but again, I think our defense has been the heart of our team and the backbone of this program for a little while. So, shout out to all those guys.
Friday night, you'll take on Villanova Wildcats in Philadelphia. What do the Hoyas need to do to get a win over Villanova Friday night?
I mean, I think that again, the preparation starts beginning of the week. The preparation what started on in the fall and building that. So I think we kind of set a good platform for us. But going into the game, I just think that, I mean, throughout the week, Coach Hogan does a great job of developing a game plan and letting us know what we need to do and what we're trying to get done out there. I think that kind of running the game plan is important, but I think playing our game and as well as possible, just playing efficient offense, sharing the ball, and bearing shots to kind of fundamental spots is something that I think every team talks about, but that we kind of hold an emphasis on. And finding the right guys in the right spots is what we need to do. So, I mean, the little plays when you play a great team like Villanova, the little plays will separate us. So, winning those balls, if there's a rebound, kind of winning those ground balls, kind of hustling out shots, making sure we have backup, those little plays will go a ways for us. And again, capitalizing in transition because we know we got a great defense and making sure that we're ready to execute a counterattack when those do present itself.
All right, shifting things a little bit. Ready for some quick hitting questions?
Oh, let's do it.
You'll
See how good I
be good.
am.
All right. What is your go-to food spot on or around the Georgetown campus?
I'd probably go Tombs. It's a staple for us.
If we were to walk into the Georgetown locker room, what song would most likely be playing on the loudspeakers?
We enjoy country music like Morgan Wallen or a Dixieland Delight we play after games.
All right. People know Coach Warren is a very passionate fan of his favorite teams. Which team does he obsess over more, the New York Islanders or the New York Jets?
God, Jets. Depends on the season, but Jets because it frustrates him.
The NFL draft is this weekend. I can only
Yeah,
imagine
we
he's
got a
got his draft
spiel
order
about
picked
it.
out.
We already got a spiel about it.
What's the best thing about going to college in the nation's capital?
But there's always something to do. I think there's places to see and things to do.
What's your favorite Hoyas team to go watch play?
Soccer.
Men's or women's?
Men's, women's, women's too. They're both great.
Everybody always thinks about Georgetown basketball, so that's why I asked the question. That's a good answer.
It makes it
All
a little hard to travel to Capital One at times, especially with the midweek games.
Who is the funniest guy on the Georgetown lacrosse team?
Henry Caponiti.
One word to describe assistant coach Ted Moon.
Legend.
What's your favorite Taylor Swift song?
What's the she wears short skirts? That one.
I think it's called Love Song or something.
Yeah, we'll go with that one.
Right. What's your, when the Hoyas travel on the road, where's your favorite spot to go get a team meal or have like a team dinner?
Maggiano's.
Yeah.
There it is.
There it
It
is.
took a few
There
weeks, but the
it is.
Maj
It's
makes a
back.
comeback. The
So many
Maj.
players say that. And finally, last question. What's your favorite lacrosse memory at Georgetown?
I think winning the Big East at home was cool for us. Again, winning the Big East is something that, again, we aspire to do every year, and doing it at home made it just that much more special.
Oh, man. Thank you. Graham, thank you so much for joining us on the D Fly and Dixie podcast presented by Simplicity Group. And best of luck to you and the Hoyas this week and throughout the rest of the season.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And we're back to the D Fly and Dixie podcast presented by Simplicity Group. It's great talking to Graham Bundy Jr. Do you remember that 91 team his dad played on?
Oh, do I remember that 91 team his dad played on? No question. That was a team that just had guy after guy after guy.
Dudes, they had dudes.
They had dudes for days. And I remember getting ready to play them in the regular season. And we were, Ryan Wade was a guy that I had played against in high school, and he was a freshman. And he was getting time, but not a lot of time. And I remember Tony Seaman and Scout saying, they don't even run lines. It's just whoever's closest to the box runs in the game. Wade's one of the smaller guys, so he gets kicked to the side. So he was joking, but that's how good they were. It was almost like the box was almost run like a summer league team where guys just went in when they were ready. And man, that team was a force.
I'll bring it full circle. Ryan Wade's son is playing, running on like first or second midfield at Princeton now. So he's
Right.
having a nice freshman season. Sort of unexpected, how well he's
Yeah.
playing.
Yeah, it was great to talk to Graham. Great to talk with him. I've always admired his game, respected his game. The St. Louis native to boot. Not many guys from St. Louis that you get a chance to talk
No,
lacrosse with.
no. And that was really cool. All right, Dix, as we said, there's some awesome games, and it starts on Friday night, April 26th in Baltimore. First game, one you're going to have your attention for sure. Number 12 Army at Loyola. Loyola is just out of the top 20 receiving votes, but like number 22. Both of these teams are 5-2 in the Patriot League. It's on CBS Sportsnet. It's at 7 o'clock. And this is, let's talk about the Patriot League a little bit.
We know who the six teams are in the Patriot League tournament. Colgate, Army, Loyola, Lehigh, Navy, Boston University, they've all clinched a spot. This is all about seeding. Let's take Loyola, for example. If Loyola wins on Friday night against Army, they put themselves in a position to possibly be the number one seed in the tournament and host. If they lose, they could be as low as six. That's where all the tiebreakers and other scenarios come into play. So I think the theme this weekend for all these teams is win, and then everything else is just going to fall into place. This Loyola team has won five in a row. Latest was a victory over Navy last weekend. They welcome back their goaltender, Luke Stout, Adam Patra, Evan James playing terrific on the attack, producing points every weekend. And this is an Army team that has won two in a row. After losing to Colgate 14-11, they've beaten Navy, they've beaten Bucknell. Will Colletti, their faceoff man, did not play last weekend in that win over Bucknell. His health status is up in the air. And that's a big one because he is arguably the best faceoff man in the country. So CBS Sports Network has it for you Friday night, and it should be a great atmosphere at Ridley. It is senior night, so big crowd expected.
Ridley with a good crowd is always fun too.
You heard Garrett Degnan last week say one of his favorite places to play on the road is Loyola, because he said that atmosphere is always intense, and he's not wrong. And then when Loyola plays on the road at Hopkins, that whole far side, half of the bleachers is the Loyola student body. They make the short walk to Homewood. So yeah, Loyola's gonna they're gonna bring the noise.
You know, I've always been a fan of the CAA, and they have their regular season championship Friday night at 7 o'clock. Number 15, Towson, and number 18, Delaware. These two teams deserve to be in the top 20. They are 6-0 in the league. Towson's 10-3. Really have put in a really impressive season. Delaware's 8-3. This is always a tough game, always a fight, and this is going to be a really good one.
Yeah, it's almost like they're destined to be in this position the last few years. Delaware has been the class of the CAA. Towson definitely fighting to get back to that designation. The Tigers have won six in a row. The Blue Hens have won five. Mikey Weiser, he's terrific. I mean, he's a bona fide. He could be a second team All-American in 2024. That's how good he is. This is a Delaware team too that kind of fell off the radar They had a little bit of a rough patch late February, early March, where they lost three out of four. And that loss to Syracuse 14-6, kind of people then are kind of like, okay, well, was Delaware that good? Because last year they were really, really good.
Yeah. Didn't
And it,
Delaware start in the top 20 and was in the top 20 for the early part of the season before falling out and then rising
absolutely.
back up
Yeah.
over
No,
their
no doubt. They won
win
their
streak?
first two games of the season, then they lost to Penn, then they lost to Michigan, beat Monmouth, lost to Syracuse. But you know, when you lose three out of four to ranked teams, voters, and I'm guilty of this, they're kind of like, okay, well, I mean, Delaware's not a top 20 team right now. And so they fell out of the top 20. But like I said, they've slowly worked their way back up. And this is the to determine number one seed in the CAA tournament. And CAA is that's number one seed hosts, right?
Think so.
Yeah. So that's gigantic.
All important. In the game we've spoken about with Graham Bundy, number 11 Georgetown, 9-3, 3-1 the Big East, travels up to the main line, take on the Wildcats, who are 8-5 overall, 2-2 in the Big East. This is for the number two seed, essentially, in the Big East tournament.
Denver, the number one seed in the conference, they beat Georgetown first time in five meetings. Georgetown, Villanova, Providence, those three. If Villanova loses to Georgetown and Providence can beat St. John's, Providence can grab that three seed because they beat the Wildcats a couple weeks ago. But St. John's is still alive and they play Providence this weekend. So as Graham was saying, you know, Denver and Georgetown, Villanova have kind of been those top three, but Providence, St. John's, Marquette all improved. And now we're talking about Providence maybe being seeded higher than a Villanova in the conference tournament. So we're seeing some of that come to fruition. This will be a big weekend, obviously, for the Big East.
Yeah, also Georgetown's right on the edge of sort of the cut line,
The bubble.
on the bubble, and they need this victory just to keep a lot keep their at-large chances alive. A
That's a
loss
great
there could
point
be,
because losing to Villanova will definitely hurt their metrics.
yeah, for sure. Big game. All right, moving on to Saturday. First game starts at noon, that I have on my marquee matchups. It's a big one in the Ivy League, especially for Princeton. Number 13 ranked Tigers are 3-2 in the Ivy League. They'll travel to Yale to take on the number 9 ranked Bulldogs, who are 4-1. You can see this on ESPN Plus. Again, is a must win for Princeton. If they were to lose and Brown beats Harvard, their season is over.
Who would have thought a couple weeks ago that we'd be talking about Brown being in the mix? I mean, this is a team that was struggling mightily. They're 3-10 overall.
They were 1-9.
Yeah. So Yale, Cornell, Penn, they're done deal. They're in the Ivy League tournament. As you mentioned, this is gigantic for Princeton. They've got to win to this is the old control your own destiny mantra. They win, everything's cool. Princeton loses, they come up short against a really good Yale team. And Brown, as you mentioned, if they can beat Harvard, they'll take that fourth and final spot. So I mean you've seen Princeton play ad nauseum. When they're at their best, what's working?
They're winning faceoffs. They're getting good goalie play, and their offense is being efficient and getting good shots in close. I mean, they have some snipers, but Colt Maxey is going to get the number one defender, and he's going to get some points. It's really where the Kabiri and Burns are can get some stuff going, and then they can generate offense from their midfield. So it's their
So
midfield shooters.
Yale faces off pretty well. Let's say Princeton can go 50-50 there, maybe 40-60. Yale can score. They can score a lot, but they also give up a lot. So I think Princeton matches up pretty well with the Bulldogs. I'm not saying they're going to win,
Yeah.
but this will be a it's going to be a high scoring game, and I think that your nephew Mike G, he's going to have to come up big.
He's going
You
to
know,
have a great
it's going to
game.
be who can make this is a game. What goalie can make the save late? I think that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, and again, it doesn't need to be said, but it's a must-win for Princeton. They know it. They feel like they're playing in the playoffs already. And who wants it more, Dix? Who wants it more? Is what this is going to come down to. All right, Dix. This is a big game in the ACC, especially for the Virginia Cavaliers, who come into this game on a losing streak. They're number five in the country. They're 10-3 overall. And they will be taking on the number one ranked Fighting Irish, who are 3-0 in the ACC. This game's at 2 o'clock on ESPNU.
Remember last week we hearkened back to the dominance of Duke over Virginia. Last year, Virginia Notre Dame played three times. Cavaliers beat the Irish twice in the regular season because there was no ACC tournament. So those two played each other. And then Notre Dame finally, got over the Wahoo hump in the national semifinals, beating the Cavaliers. Notre Dame's playing at such a high level right now. Virginia, they've got to figure it out between the pipes. Matt Nunes has just mightily struggled the last 2 weeks. Didn't make a save before he was pulled in that game against Duke. And then, look, I think that you ever seen that might be an insurance commercial where an elephant is playing goalie on the hockey rink? I think you could have put an elephant in goal in that Syracuse Virginia game, and they're still going to score. What they scored, that's
Yeah.
how great everyone was shooting that day. Virginia's going to need goaltending in this one. Faceoffs will be huge. And wow, it's all about seeding right now because I do believe mathematically, North Carolina still has an opportunity if they beat Duke to make the ACC tournament, but then it comes down to like goal differential and that kind of thing. And I think what Carolina would have to win by is pretty, ambitious and might not be attainable. So this is all about, seeding for the most, in all likelihood, this is about seeding for the ACC tournament.
Yeah, two things I'm interested in seeing in this game. I want to see if Virginia, how they bounce back, how they rise to losing their last two games and whether they can come back at home. And then I want to see if Notre Dame can just keep it going. They play like an experienced team of veterans, like that NBA team or something that just gives their best effort and knows how to win games, knows how to play just the right take, do what it takes to win. And
They're very precise.
I want to see if they can keep it going.
You seem skeptical on Notre Dame. And the reason that I ask that is because a lot of people, and I fall into this camp, we're saying it's Notre Dame and everyone else. Last year it was Notre Dame, Virginia, Duke, then everyone else. But I think the everyone else gap between Duke and Virginia has significantly narrowed this year, whereas Notre Dame still seems to be that team. Do you feel that way? Are you I'm just and I have the ability to see your face as we're recording this and our listeners don't. I just see skepticism.
No, I don't. I feel like Notre Dame is the best team in the country, and they should be the number one ranked team. Probably should be the top seed. I don't know how the metrics will work out in RPI and all that stuff, but there's no skepticism. It's more of I like watching a group of guys just go out and take care of business, and I want to see if they can continue to do that.
Understood. It'll be on the road too in Charlottesville.
And finally, last game I want to get your thoughts on and preview for this weekend is the thriller in the Atlantic 10. Number 16, St. Joseph's play at number 14, ranked Richmond. Both these teams are 4-0 in the A-10. And I just love seeing like two CAA teams coming down to the wire, two Atlantic 10 teams coming down the wire, both ranked in the top 20. We just don't see that a lot. And I love that this game is happening at 4 o'clock on Saturday.
It's great. It really is. And a St. Joe's team that started the season three straight losses, Duke, Boston University, Towson. And I think a lot of that had to do with life after Zach Cole. He used to get them, what, 70% possessions. And so they needed to learn how to play and win without him. And they've done that. And Richmond, a team that played such an ambitious out-of-conference schedule, similar to St. Joe's, Maryland, Virginia, Duke, Georgetown, lost those games, but that's what makes you battle-tested for opportunities like they're going to face against St. Joe's. So, number one seed on the line for the A-10, two really good teams, two teams that took their lumps early in the season, but now have found success. And it's going to be a good one. Going to be a really, really good game.
Without question. So get out there, go see some games this weekend, make your plans to watch them. Set that extra time on the DVR because games go late and you miss stuff. Don't just stop it after 2 hours, put it the extra half hour and enjoy these games this weekend.
You couldn't help that, though.
I know it's
You couldn't help
what
that.
I
You
just
didn't do
said made
anything
no
wrong.
sense. I didn't do anything
And the
wrong.
Hopkins, and as we were saying, like the Virginia Syracuse game was taking so long because of all the goals scored. The Hopkins Maryland game, aside from the Degnan foul where the officials had to get together, decide what they were going to do, that game was moving along because there weren't a lot of goals being
It's
scored.
true. That's true. All right, it's time for this week's Give and Go, presented by Indutex USA. And this week's Give and Go, Dix. I've had a we're gonna do something called the Misery Index. So I had to go to the dentist earlier this week, but yesterday, driving to work, I got a flat tire. Now I'm lucky that I live very close to where I work. And it's sort of like through like neighborhood streets. I don't really have to go on any highways or anything, but I got a flat tire. And it's just the most miserable inconvenience thing because you know it when it happens. You can hear it. You know, you're like, you hear like the ding, 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 and the tire, and you're like,
Then you look at your dashboard to see if the light is
yeah.
indicating that you're low on
Right.
air or whatever.
So I was going, I mean, it was flat, like blown out. I was only going maybe 30 miles an hour, 25 miles. So I wasn't going that fast. Again, I was like in a, like a neighborhood kind of street. And I was able to pull over. I was so
Well,
close.
how did it get flat? Did you like hit a nail or did you like jump a curb or
No, I think it just blew out. I don't
Oh,
know.
wow.
It, yeah, so sidewall blew out. And my tires were old. I had been thinking about getting new tires and I should have done it a while ago. I got new tires this morning, basically. So I like
When your tires have 200,000 miles worth of tread, it's time to change them out, Dan.
But my, I want to do a misery index of things that can happen with your car, right? So, and we'll rank these things. So, flat tire, again, it's more inconvenient. I don't want, I'm talking about like a major accident where someone gets hurt, but an accident where there's a fender bender, just the, like, you just scratch it up, you bang it up, and you just know that it's a problem. And when there's someone else involved too, it's even worse because then you got to go through the whole insurance process. So there's obviously that. A dead battery. Like you go to start your car and you don't know what the problem is and its battery's dead, or you find out there was an interior light left on by your 5-year-old or something like that. You run out of gas, which can happen. I don't modern in modern day times, it doesn't happen as much as it seemed to happen when like when we were teenagers. But my I had a car that had a terrible like the gas gauge didn't work. So you just you had
Okay.
to you never really knew. And then finally, just like it won't start from like the ignition or the start or something. So like those five
Yeah.
inconvenient things. What is the worst?
Well, I feel like the running out of gas thing has been mitigated, especially, and it's been a while, but ever since the Seinfeld episode where Kramer took the car out for a test drive, and they were
Yeah.
almost like Thelma and Louise trying to
Yeah.
see how low they could get the gas gauge.
That's a good episode. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing is worse, I'm gonna say, than a flat tire, because depending upon what the weather is, if it's hot out, it sucks. If it's cold out, it sucks. If you're driving to work and you've got like a decent shirt, decent pair of pants on, that stinks. I'll tell you a story. This was back in the 90s. I was coming home from like Towson Mall or something, and I had a blowout. And I was on an off ramp. It might have been like Delaney Valley Road or one of those roads. And it just so happens that like a group of cyclists were coming by, and it was in December and it was butt cold. And I had my car pulled over, And truth be told, I'd never changed a tire before. I think it was a couple of years after I graduated from Hopkins. I never have had to change a tire. And luckily, they're like, "Hey, you need a hand?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And they're like, "Okay." And they like, it was like a crew. They just went to work. And they're like, "Okay, bye." And I was like, "Hey, can I?" Okay. So it was almost like a mirage. It's
Yeah.
like,
Oh, you lucked out there. I mean, I know that I lucked out yesterday. I was 200, 300 yards from my like office. So I had a 10 o'clock meeting. I was driving to work and I was like 9:50 when this happened. So I just pulled over, locked my car, went, did my meeting, and then dealt with it, you know, afterwards. And then I called AAA. The guy came out, he was awesome, got me up and running, and I was able to so. And also, it was a nice day. I was standing outside, the sun was shining, it was warm spring day. And I was thinking, though, how miserable that would be if it was raining, if it was nighttime, if it was cold, if I wasn't near my anywhere. Like, if I was, I just, you know, I told you I went to New Jersey this weekend. I keep driving home late at night on the 295 in the middle of like Jersey. That would have not been cool
No.
if it happened 2 days before that, which it
Right.
probably could have. So, yeah, high misery. And I was thinking when you said it kind of is the worst, again, accident, kind of ruling that out because that's never fun. But the other ones I was talking about, a dead battery or like your car, you're usually at a place, like you're home, like it's in your driveway or in your garage, or you're at a work or somewhere where you're a destination. So when your car doesn't start, it's kind of like, oh, you know what? I remember this is one of those. So I had a my car. I had just worked the Committed Academy at when I worked at Inside Lacrosse. It was at Goucher College. We had been there for like 5 days straight. Committed Academy was like a for kids who just finished their junior or senior year of high school before they went to college, and you line up with your teams. It was fun, but it was a stay overnight, and you get to. So I'd been there for like 5 days. The whole staff had left. I had given my car to one of our staff members to like move something around, and when she brought it back, I was like, "Do you have the keys?" She's like, "Oh yeah." And then gave me the keys. Everyone had left. I had like went around to do the last final check of like trash or something. Talked to like one of the security guards at the counter. My car wouldn't start. I was so tired, so hot, so sweaty. This is like
And yeah, and
5:30
you're
on
just
like a
angry.
Sunday. I was so miserable. And my car didn't start. I had to call, I think I called AAA and it came
Why
out.
did
Like
it run out of gas?
it
Did
was the
it?
battery. I think
Ugh.
some. This particular person had like done something in my car, turned something on, and had been
Ran the
sitting
air
there for a while.
conditioning nonstop,
Something, I
probably.
don't know, but it didn't. And I had to get the battery jumped. Because again, this was a, no one was there. There wasn't even, this is a college campus, a small college campus in the summertime on a Sunday evening. You know, I couldn't even, like, hey, can you pull your car up and use my jumper? I had to call like someone to come. That was inconvenient. That was high on the misery index.
I'll tell you two things that you didn't include. One is a first world problem, and that is when I use Waze for the most part. But if you're not, but if you're going somewhere and you're not super familiar where you're going, and you don't have good, if it's a bad cell area or whatever, and you miss a turn, and then the Waze doesn't come up quick enough for the next turn, or the next turn, or the next turn, like ready to, jump out of a window, your car window in that particular instance. One thing that, and it's been a long time since I've done this. I think I was in high school or early college, locked my keys in my car.
Oh yeah.
That sucks. Because you're
Yeah.
like, it's right there.
See it.
I'm a foot away from my keys, and I'm a dumbass because I'd locked my keys in my car.
There's a sadly famous story about this. So there's this like farm party that I've been going to for many years. We went and like started going when we were in college, and there were some guys from my fraternity who came out. It was on the Eastern Shore. We camped overnight. Got ready to go the next morning, and they
The
were ready
Farm
to.
Fest?
No, it's a guy's farm that we know. I know
Okay.
in
Because I used to play in Farm
Centerville.
Fest. Mike Brennan's benefit. We used to play lacrosse down at Easton and had a good time. I thought you were going to say Farm Fest.
No, so we'd been camping. You can like swim and stuff in the chest river and stuff, but this one guy couldn't find his keys, and he thought he locked them in the car. But we looked everywhere. Where he might have drunkenly left these keys somewhere overnight in any a 100 acre farm. We looked everywhere. Called in, like the locksmith guy finally came, opened up his car, and he couldn't find his car keys in his car either. And we're like, "If you look in your pocket," the clothes he was wearing, he reached in his pocket and pulled his keys out. We spent 8 hours on this, and we were all hungover and miserable. We almost killed him. Almost
Wait,
killed.
wait a minute. Wait a
He
minute.
wasn't
Wait a minute.
invited back.
It took him 8 hours to realize the keys
We
were
were
on
looking
him.
for the keys. We were walking around the farm. We had to get the locksmith to come. Maybe it wasn't
Oh
8 hours. Maybe it
my
was four, but it was many people involved in this
God.
endeavor. And
It
then
was
he
just
had the
a
keys on him all along.
yeah.
He
He
wasn't invited back.
should have thrown him a beat down.
That seems like a good place to stop. Big thanks to our guest, Graham Bundy Jr. Best of luck to you and your Georgetown team this week and throughout the season. A reminder, the D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. If you like what you heard, please share it with a friend. It's free. Share the love. And we always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.